This is The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Sometimes one scientific discovery changes everything. For years, doctors believed ovarian cancer began in the ovaries. Makes sense. But now, evidence suggests many of the deadliest cases actually start in the fallopian tubes, a finding that is transforming how surgeons think about cancer prevention. I'm joined this morning by New York Times science journalist Gina Colata, who joins me to explain why this shift could dramatically reduce one of the deadliest cancers affecting women. Gina wrote an article in the New York Times on July 28th titled, "Most Ovarian Cancer Isn't, and That Fact Can Save Lives." Gina Colata, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much for having me.
When I read your article, I knew that I needed to talk to you. I think that women run scared all the time of ovarian cancer because it's so undetectable until it's in a late stage. Our pap smears, our annual exams can't pick it up. What did you learn about that in and of itself?
Yeah, I think almost everybody knows somebody or knows somebody who knows somebody who had ovarian cancer. And it's always sort of the same thing. You have these vague symptoms and you say to the doctor, I don't know, I feel sort of bloated or I'm getting all these stomach aches. I don't know what it is. And they're usually told, oh, don't worry about it. It's irritable bowel syndrome. Or one woman was told to go to a physical therapist. And finally, after things really, you're getting these symptoms, not because you have an early stage cancer, you're getting these symptoms because it's already in your abdomen. But by the time they finally find out what it actually is, it's really spread and it's very difficult to control. I mean, you don't have a very good prognosis and the treatments are harsh. And so the doctors I spoke to say, you know, it's so hard to take care of these women because you feel so sad. You feel like, you know, if only we could have done something sooner, if only we didn't find out when this cancer is already spread all over the place. And they say the operations are long and involved and they never get all the cancer out. It's just a really tragic situation.
Yeah. So there's been some research for a while that suggests that ovarian cancer isn't really ovarian cancer. It actually starts in the fallopian tubes. Like 80% ovarian cancers start in the fallopian tubes. What was the first research done and how was that received?
It was really amazing to me. This has been sort of going on for so long and I didn't know about it. My editors didn't know about it. About 25 years ago, a Dutch scientist was studying ovarian cancer. And so he thought he would look at ovaries that had been removed from women who had a genetic high risk because they didn't want to get it, so they had their ovaries removed. And when doctors take out the ovaries, they also take out the tubes because the tubes can't survive without the ovaries. They need them for a blood supply. However, the ovaries can survive perfectly well without the tubes. So he had all this giant collection of ovaries and tubes, and he was going to study. He was going to see, did these women have ovarian cancer? When do you first start seeing it? They were high risk. They didn't think they didn't have any diagnosis at the time. So he's looking and he's saying, you know, I'm not seeing much in the ovaries, but it's so strange. I'm seeing all these little microscopic tumors at the very site where the fallopian tube connects itself or attaches or I guess brushes against the ovary. And he said, this may be where ovarian cancer starts. So he gave a presentation and wrote a paper. And he said, most people thought he was crazy. They said, this doesn't make any sense. We don't believe it. But some people said, maybe we should investigate. Is it just women? Is this really the start of ovarian cancer? Is it only in women at high genetic risk or is it for everybody? You know, and how can we sort of nail this down? So over the next decade and a half or so, a lot of studies were done and they did nail it down. They said, yeah, this is ovarian cancer does not start in the ovaries, except for that 20%. And those are the 20% of ovarian cancers that are curable, weirdly enough. And the ones that start in the tubes are the really bad ones. So gynecological oncologist said, we really have to get the word out. One of the problems is there is no insurance code, so insurance couldn't even pay for it. You have to have a code to put down for each diagnosis. And there's nothing that says take out the tubes to prevent ovarian cancer. So through a lot of lobbying, the gynecological oncologist got a code, but they sell this thing, like, why don't insurers pay for it? And why don't women and doctors know about it? Because doctors outside this tiny community of gynecological oncologists were just as ignorant as the rest of us. They couldn't seem to get the word out. So they hope all this is now going to change. But for years, it was like, you know, some doctors knew, but most didn't. Most women never had a chance to say, I'm having abdominal surgery. I finished with my childbearing. Why don't you just take out the tubes at the same time?
Yeah. So there would be two scenarios in which you could get your fallopian tubes removed and maybe at this point covered by insurance. And that would be if you were going in for some other type of procedure in your abdomen. What?
Like a hernia operation, mm-hmm. Like a gallbladder operation, like almost anything. Even having they call tying your tubes, actually they cut them instead of cutting them, take them out. And all this is done that is done laparoscopically. You don't have to have like a big open surgery for some of these things. You just have to sort of be in there. Or maybe some women, like the high risk women, might say, I just want you to take the tubes out. I don't want my ovaries removed. I don't want to lose all my estrogen, because your ovaries will work perfectly fine without the tubes. Take the tubes out. And actually, you know, it does affect your fertility. However, if you're really high risk, women were having their ovaries removed anyway. And instead of removing your ovaries, if you remove the tube, you could still have IVF. I mean, that's a kind of extreme thing, but if you're really at high risk, you might want to think about it, maybe. Obviously, it's a personal decision.
Yes, yes. So that's the second case that I was talking about where you may get it covered. Would this be in the case of women who are carriers of the BRCA gene?
Those are the ones who are high risk, yeah. But what I learned, which really surprised me, is most ovarian cancer cases occur in women who don't have any identifiable risk. And that's probably because the women who have a genetic risk are just a very small proportion of the population. So even though their risk is higher, there are so few of them that most women have no reason to think they're going to get ovarian cancer, and then they have it, which is really scary too. I didn't know that either. I learned a lot, as you could see.
Yes. Yes. Well, I learned a lot from reading your article, and I'm wondering, your article came out July 28th, and I'm wondering how much your inbox has blown up since then, because the New York Times
never ends. I'm still getting emails from people. I just got one yesterday from a woman who said, how can we lobby insurance companies to make them cover this? This is incredible. We have to make sure that everybody knows about it. I thought, wow, I'm still getting these things. So it's, and when I try to answer everybody, because I think it's only polite. So I did refer her to one of the oncologists who's been lobbying for insurance companies to cover it. But the other thing I learned was recently, finally, major medical societies have been saying women should be offered the option of having their tubes removed if they're having abdominal surgery and don't want to have any more children. And the American Cancer Society is going to start a big national campaign trying to tell women about this. They said, you know, it shouldn't just be a little secret among oncologists. Women should know that this is an option for them. Not everybody's going to want it. Some people are going to say, I don't want any normal part of my body removed. And that's understandable. And others are going to say, why would I want to keep these tubes when it could be a source of cancer? So it's
exactly
an interesting time, really. All this time, I didn't know, you didn't know. And I'm a medical reporter. How could I not know?
Yeah, this is the first time I've heard of it.
You know, I found out a guy who's a prostate cancer surgeon said to me, hey, did you know that out of nowhere, ovarian cancer starts in the tubes? And I said, what? Really? Who could tell me about that? But it was so strange that the prostate cancer guy would tell me.
Yeah. So does this tie in with the fact that when we screen, there's really no way of screening for ovarian cancer?
Right. Yes.
Is there hope for screening that can detect it in the fallopian tubes?
No. I asked the same question. I said, could we just bind it? And they said, no, it's too small. And they described it as like two doctors had two different vivid descriptions. One doctor said it's like dandruff falling from your head onto your shoulders, these little specks that fly out of the fallopian tubes. And the other one said it's like dust when you're sweeping a dusty room and the dust flies up in the air. And I said, you know, then you can't find it. These little things just sort of fly all over the place. They hit the ovary, they turn into cancer, but they're also hitting the other places. So it's pretty much spread by the time you find it.
Right. I have a friend who had a hysterectomy, you know, 10 years ago or something, and she was maybe 50 years old. She still had her ovaries and she still had hormones. And so they recommended to leave the ovaries for that reason. Ever since then, she's been sort of wondering, should I have just had them taken anyway? But, you know, 10 years later, of course, it's easy to think that now that she's postmenopausal, but they could have
her ovaries even then, because they still produce hormones, even postmenopausal.
Yeah. Right. But you get to a point where when they're not producing anything. But my point is, at that point, if we had known what we know now, she definitely could have said, take the fallopian tubes. I'll keep my ovaries until they're dried and shriveled up. And
Absolutely. Yeah, that's another situation where you're having abdominal surgery and you could say, take the tubes while you're there. Why? Yeah. You know, or if you're having a cesarean and this is your last child that you want, you could say, take the tubes while you're doing the cesarean. Why not? I mean, some people would say that. Some people, obviously, it's such a personal decision. I mean, I don't want to inflict anything on anybody. Everybody's going to have a different reaction to this. But you could at least have the option if you want to do it.
Yes. It reminds me that I've been putting off having hernia surgery because, you know, in my mind, the hernia is not big enough yet. But hearing this, it makes me want to go ahead and schedule that and take the fallopian tubes while you're at it, because at this point in my life, I don't need those fallopian tubes. Now, you know, you've mentioned a couple of times, it's very personal. Lots of people say, don't remove anything from my body that is naturally occurring in my body. What are the thoughts around that? Because I get it, but also at this point, those fallopian tubes are going to be, you know, the source of ovarian cancer. And ovarian cancer is so hard to detect and one of the deadliest cancers for that reason.
Well, it's interesting because there's this group called Breakthrough Cancer, and they, and I think they're working with the American Cancer Society, they're doing a little study to answer exactly your question. And it's taking place at three medical centers. And every woman who is scheduled for abdominal surgery is asked if she would like to see, and if she'd like to see a video about ovarian cancer. And it tells her everything we've been discussing. And then they ask her, is she interested when she had, I tell you, you can think about it, but are you interested in having your tubes removed during your surgery? And that way they're going to find out, can they explain it in a way that makes a lot of sense, to make sense to women, where they understand what this is all about and why they might want to think about it. And they can also try to understand how likely are women to want to see the video, to want to learn about this, and having seen it, to say, yes, during my surgery, you can go ahead and remove the tubes. So we don't know the answers yet because nobody's actually asked the question in a good way, but they're hoping to get an answer.
It would be interesting to get those stats on how many women say, yes, I want to see the video, and afterwards, yes, I want my fallopian tubes removed.
Well, I did speak to one woman who saw the video. She's going to have hernia surgery, and she's 79, and she said, I don't need my tubes anymore. I don't want it. So, see, I mean, I want it. I want the surgery. Take them out. I mean, while you're at it, take them out.
Yes. So
there's at least her. She said yes.
Yes. I remember when my mother was, and my mom, who's now 87, when she was done having her four kids, they, like you said, they tied her tubes,
right,
which means really that they cut them.
Is that they cut them. I thought they tied them. They actually cut them.
Right. I was picturing a clamp or something.
Me too.
Stitching them closed or something.
Or I thought they had like a, like you're having stitches, like a little stitch thing, and they like sew them together or something in a weird way. I don't know.
Exactly. Did you ever find any research on, you know, a procedure like that, like my mom had, either having, you know, some sort of prevention of
it cancer? Really doesn't. No, your tubes are still there.
Yeah, they're there. So.
Unfortunately, no.
Right. You talked in the beginning about the 20% of these cancers that actually do start in the ovaries, and mm-hmm. that type of ovarian cancer is very treatable.
Right.
Can you tell me more?
No, because that's all I know.
Huh.
I wish I knew more. I didn't ask much about those. I was interested in the tubes.
Yeah, it is. It's really fascinating. So with the American Cancer Society, you did say American Cancer Society, right? Kind of signing on to this, initiating a campaign of awareness. Is what will we see next, do you think?
And I don't know what their campaign's going to be, but apparently it's being like a national media campaign trying to tell women about the ovarian cancer connection. But I don't know. I don't know how it's going. I'm sure it's going to be, if they have money, they have credibility. So I'm hoping the word will get out.
Yes. Well, it's fascinating. I know that you have, in some of your writing and your journalism, you have turned topics into books.
No, not writing any more books.
No more books.
It's taking too much time. You know what I really like about my job is that I can switch from topic to topic. And a book, you've just got this thing. You're just sort of the same thing. You're just working on it forever. No, I've done enough books.
Yes. Okay. Well, then I won't ask you about if you were going to update your diet, your book, Rethinking Diet.
No, I wrote that book before anybody had any way of really effectively helping people to lose weight. And I basically said, you know what? They've tried forever. Don't blame yourself. It's not your fault. And don't think that somehow there's some magic diet, because there really isn't. But now, of course, everything's changed. But that was at a time that all the drug companies had totally given up. They said, we've tried, we have all these great ideas. Nothing is either too toxic, the drug, or it doesn't work. So I wrote this book about how, here's the whole history. We know it's largely genetic, a tendency to gain weight. And we know that you have some control within a range of what you could weigh. But if your genetics say you're going to be overweight, and you are not going to, it's unlikely that you will, through some force of willpower, somehow get yourself to be permanently much thinner. It's just really unlikely. And we all know from examples that that doesn't work. So no, I'm not going to update it. I have to write a whole new book.
Well, it still informs what's going on today as we're wading through this whole world of GLP-1 drugs and people going on them and then off them, and what happens if they are those people who genetically are predisposed to be.
You know what interests me? Like Oprah Winfrey, she had a doctor who had explained her perfectly well, and she was told, it's not your fault that you got on diet after diet and kept gaining the weight back. And she's on a GLP-1, she's losing all this weight. But then you always think, well, now I'm thin, I can keep it off. So she stopped taking it. Of course, it came right back. And then people say, oh, you just have to exercise more. And then you think, well, how about Serena Williams? Nobody could be exercising more. She couldn't control it. I mean, you say, You know, nobody could have tried harder than Oprah either. Remember all those diets she would be on? And then it always, weight always came back. And the only thing that worked for her was a GLP-1. So you just have to have a little bit of empathy. I mean, most people who are struggling with their weight have tried their whole lives to control it. And it's gone up and down, and they always blame themselves. I actually asked somebody, like, why? You know, in psychology, they always say, like, if you try something and it doesn't work, you don't want to keep trying it. I said, why do people keep trying it and trying it? And they said, well, I think there's like this real reward when your weight is going down. And you think, oh, I feel so good. I'm in such control. I can do it. I can do it. And then when it goes back up, you blame yourself. Oh, it's my fault. Didn't have enough willpower.
Yes.
A whole different subject.
A whole different subject. Okay. Well, I know now you're not going to rewrite or update that book.
No, I'm not.
And you're not going to write a book on, will we start to call it fallopian tube cancer?
Maybe we should. I'm not going to write a book
about it. Right. I've had this little niggling question as we've been talking all along. There are plenty of people out there, and certainly in the community that I live in, who pay a lot of money for elective procedures.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you have heard of any kind of price tag for someone who goes in and says, you know what, I just want my fallopian tubes removed.
I actually ask, but a lot depends on, you know, as well as I do, I'm sure that different doctors, different medical centers, they charge, the prices are all over the map. So I don't know. I also know some doctors have just coded it as a tubal ligation, tying the tubes. And then they get it paid for it. Because you could say, I want a tubal ligation. It's fine. You say, I want you to take the whole tube out, which is no different, really. And they say, oh, well, that's elective, which some companies, some insurers do pay, but a lot of them don't at this point. They might. I'm hoping they'll start. They promise.
Yes. We have a lot of institutions here or businesses that focus on elective procedures that are mostly aesthetic type procedures. That might do anything from like liposuction to Botox to hormone replacement therapy.
Right.
I'm picturing that being a place where on their little, well, now very long menu of services that they offer right at the end there, fallopian tube removal.
Well, let me know if that happens. That'll be interesting.
It would be really interesting.
Yeah.
Gina Coletta is a science and health journalist at the New York Times and a book author. Yeah. Gina, I'm so thankful that you joined me today on The Mountain Life. This has been really informative.
It was really fun. It was really a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for having me.